Crying is also an art. We need to know where to cry, when to cry, how to cry, and in front of whom to cry. That's very important. So we see that Arjuna, having misunderstood the reason or the purpose for this battle, confused, facing his own relatives, his teacher, his grandfather, he is lost, he doesn't know what to do, and the war is about to start, the two armies are stationed, and he loses it completely. He says, my throat is dry, my limbs are shaking, my body is hot, I can't even breathe, I can't even hold this bow and arrow, and how am I to face my own near and dear ones, because destruction, the near and dear ones, will cause so much damage to society. And fortunately, he approaches the Lord of the universe, Bhagavan Krishna himself, to cry, to express his confusion. But in our case, when we have a problem and we go to cry in front of somebody, what usually happens, say I have a small little tumor that was removed, and somebody, what's happened? Oh, it's paining. I had this small tumor, you know, luckily it was a pre-cancer, but, you know, I'm still in a lot of pain, so I'm hurting. So he said, this is nothing. You know, my uncle's brother-in-law had the same tumor and it had spread. And he spread to his lungs and he died a horrible death. So instead of getting reassured, you become more miserable. So you need to know where you need to cry, in front of whom you should cry. There's a story about this in this temple. You know, they have this little mridang that you play with your fingers. So this mridang in the temple was there, and every day, you know, people would come and play on their fingers. And so the mridang one day goes to this big drum and he says, you know, my life is so miserable. He said, why is your life miserable? So every day people come and hit me with their fingers. I'm in constant pain. Drum says, this is nothing. I get hammered by big sticks. But Arjuna, fortunately, did not get this kind of treatment because he approached the Lord himself for advice. And that's what the whole second chapter onward, the Bhagavad Gita talks about it. So far in the first chapter, as we said, we have seen the two armies ready, the conches were blown. Arjuna saw his near and dear ones. He was confused. He says, look, you know, he could foresee because he was a visionary. He said, there's going to be wholesale destruction of men. So many young men will die. The families will suffer. There will be women who are widows, children, orphans. And this destruction for what? Why are we doing it? Just for a piece of land? I don't want that. I don't want the joy of the land. I don't want, even if you give me the kingdom of the three lokas, the earth, the space, and the heaven. The space means the lower worlds. Even those, if I get, I still do not want to fight this war. So that's where we had ended last week. And he brought in a term called Kula Dharma and the Nashta. When the Kula Dharma, when the families get destroyed, what happens? That's what we had started last week. And so, having talked about the destruction of the Kula Dharma, he continues, what happens when the Kula Dharma is destroyed and what happens when so many young men are killed. So he's continuing his discourse. He's giving the Bhagavan new and newer arguments about why this war we should not fight. So we come to verse number 41. Adharma bhivavat Krishna pradushyanti kulastriyah strishu dushtasu varshneya jayate varna sankarah. So in the 40th verse, he said, adharma abhi vati, abhibhavatyuta. So adharma, when the dharmas are destroyed, when the family tradition is destroyed, the family culture is destroyed, what will happen? Adharma means the lack of piety, lack of goodness will dominate the whole of society. And if that happens, abhibhavatyuta, adharma abhibhavat. So when adharma becomes predominant, when the good are less and the evil are more, and when the evil thoughts and culture permeate society, what will happen? O Krishna, O Bhagwan Krishna, pradushyanti kulastriya. Pradushyanti means they will be corrupted. Who? Kulastriya. So the women of the family will be corrupted, will go get into trouble and will be polluted. And then once that happens, Trishu Dushtasu, O Varshneya, O Krishna, who was belonging to the Vrishni clan, Strishu Dushtasu, when the women are corrupted or polluted, Jayate Varna Sankara, the whole society, the whole caste system, the whole whatever these traditions have been established will all be destroyed, will all be corrupted. So let us see what we mean by this. So the very important point in this is the role of women. What is the role of women in the family and in society? And it is well known that women are the one that keep the family together. It is the husband may go out and work and may earn and all, but the who takes care of the children, who takes care of the home, who takes care of the unity, even if the husband is very, you know, difficult to deal with or angry, or but with her patience, with her love, with her forgiveness, she's able to maintain the family, take care of the children, make sure the children, even if there are conflicts in the family, make sure the children are not affected, they are protected. So the role of women is very important. And if the women get corrupted or get polluted, not only the family suffers, ultimately the whole society suffers, because the women are the backbone of the family, and ultimately each family makes up society. What is society? It's just a mixture of families, just as a wall is a unit of bricks. So a brick is a unit of a wall. So women are. So the role of women is very important in society. And that's what Arjuna is telling him, that what will happen? So many young men will perish. And the majority of, you know, because both sides, all the young men were there, and the war was going to be war to the end, and so many young men will perish. And what will happen? Men will be gone, there will be less men, and there will be so many women who have nobody to take care of them. They have nobody to take care of them, nobody to protect them, nobody to save them, you know, because the women's chastity and, you know, integrity has to be protected. And if that doesn't happen, then what will they do? They will just go out and mingle with whoever, whichever man they find. There will be no quality, there will be no culture, there will be. And once the women get polluted, then what's going to happen to our society? So that's what his argument is, that this war is not only going to cause destruction of society, but it's going to be a long-term effect. It's not something that by tomorrow or day after, this problem will continue, because even the next generation, because the women, once they are doing that, and then the children who are born, who will take care of them? Again, they will have no fathers. It will be like what we see right now in society. Unfortunately, it is happening. There are so many women who have children, and they don't know who the father is, or if they know the father is gone. And such young men who grow up without a father, what kind of life will they have? So the role of women is emphasized in this. And Krishna says, you are right. I know that the role of women is very important. I totally agree with you. But my question is, he says, suppose there is a house that is, you know, has some partially the walls are, you know, some are cracking, and the roof is little, has few leaks. The paint is bad, the, you know, yard takes care of it. So what do? You call handymen and they will fix it. They will fix the walls, they will paint the walls, they will fix the roof, they can do the gardens, they can do everything. But suppose the house is a total mess, the tornado came, the roof was blown away, The walls have been demolished, you know, very little bit. You cannot rebuild this house. What do? You completely destroy it. You call the wreckers, you completely destroy the house and build it anew, because that house is not worth preserving, you know, because there is nothing left to preserve. So you are talking about dharma, you are talking about what is right, you know. He talks about dharma, you know, the kula dharma and all that. And I am here to protect dharma too. That's what Krishna says in the 18th chapter, yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamiham. So I am here to protect dharma. And what I am telling you is that society at this moment is not like that house that can be preserved or can be saved, because Kauravas have been ruling this country for 13 years. And they were the most powerful kingdom, dominating the whole of India at that time. And for 13 years of corrupt rulership, this society is rotten to the core. You know, people are used to corruption and dishonesty, and there is adulteration in the food, and people cannot trust each other. They cannot trust the rulers. And in this kind of society, what dharma are you trying to preserve? You think by not fighting and giving the kingdom on to the Kauravas, you think you are doing any good? No. All you will do is continue the evil. At this moment, the society needs to be demolished, just as that house that is broken needs to be rebuilt. And that is what the goal of this war is, that we need to remove these evil forces so that society, so the good people can flourish and goodness can happen, good things can happen. So that is what the dharma that you need to preserve. And you need to see the situation. You know, I know in certain situations war is bad and conflict is bad, but here we are left with no choice. We have tried to deal with them peacefully. They are not ready to deal, and they are not ready to improve. And the society cannot, it's completely rotten. Like when your house is full of termites and they have gone into the foundation, and you know, you can't do anything. You have to literally just blast that house with, you know, strong chemicals to clean up the house. So similarly, this society needs a strong treatment. That's what we need at this moment. And what you are saying is okay in certain situations, but in this situation is not. It's like for us, you know, once we get old and the body is really old and it's not working and I am, you know, just bedridden and not able to function, then you say it's time to give up this body and start a new journey. And what happens if you have a lot of vasanas still left, a lot of desires left? Then this body, you know, even though the body is dropped, the mind and intellect takes on a new birth and continues the journey. And then again, you know, you go in the mother's womb for 9 months, and then you have a painful birth, and then you have diapers and toilet training and go through the whole thing again, learning ABCD and your teachers hitting you. And so he says, better is in this life itself, finish your vasanas. Why do you want to rebuild this house of this body? This body is a place of suffering. Yeah, for a while things are good, but as we get older, the suffering is more. So get it over with in this life itself. Do good, help the world, do good for society, learn this knowledge of the Gita, reduce your selfish vasanas and be done with it, so that I can then, you know, travel to the higher worlds and meet my God. So that is what it says. So do not again and again try to rebuild this house. You have an opportunity. You have the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. We have Gurudev Swami Chinmayanandaji's commentary. You know, we all have it. If you don't, I would request you to buy it, because that is the only way, you know, we can study the Bhagavad Gita properly, is to have this commentary. So I do have extra copies if somebody would like. So that is the message of this verse, that even though the women will suffer, but if we continue the status quo, the women will suffer even worse. Because when evil people are predominant, then how are women going to be protected? How are they going to be sheltered? So now he continues, Arjuna, of course, he has heard the Lord, but he still continues his. Actually, the Lord hasn't spoken. What I'm just giving is the interpretation of some of these scholars. Lord himself is quiet, but that is what the authors who have written commentaries have spoken about it. So now Arjuna says, okay, what happens when the women are polluted and when the society is bad? Verse number 42. Sankaro narakayaiva kulagnanam kulasya cha patanti pitaro hesham lupta pindodaka kriyaha. So what he is saying, and he makes a point, when society is perishing, when society is suffering and it's all families are broken up, there is no dharma, then there is no culture. Sankaro, when all this happened, when society is intermingled, there is no naraka yeva. It's like the society will become like hell. And it's hell is for who? Not only for society, but kulagnanam kulasyacha. Those who have created this hellish situation, kulagnanam, those who have destroyed the families, destroyed the culture, kulasya, who have the destroyers of this culture, there will be a hellish situation. And what will happen? Then once the family culture is not maintained, patanti pitaro esham, the pitras are our ancestors, like our forefathers, grandfather, great-grandfathers who have passed away. And what will happen? Patanti, they will perish, they will suffer. Esham, of these people who have destroyed the families, even their ancestors will suffer. He says, why will they suffer? You will suffer, it's okay. But why will the ancestors? Lupta pinda udaka kriyaha. See, in Hindus, we do a shraddha ceremony. I think some of you may be familiar with it. So where it is lupta pinda odaka kriya. So what will happen? Pinda odaka means a rice ball, and no, pinda and udaka is water. So rice ball, pinda and udaka is offered. That is called kriya. That is called shraddha, and that will disappear. So we'll talk about what this shraddha ceremony means and why it is very important. So it says that when the unity of life is destroyed, when the family culture is destroyed, when the unity of life is destroyed, and what is unity of life? Is that every part of the society is equally important, just as every cell in my body is important, every part is. It's not that my hand is more important than my leg or my nose. Every part is important. Any part of mine, if I lose, it will be a problem. You know, I won't be able to either work properly or walk properly, or, you know, something will happen. Or even one cell becomes cancerous, it starts behaving abnormally, soon it will take over the entire organism. So similarly, society is all connected. In fact, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad gives a very beautiful statement. It says, even if you break a flower somewhere, you will disturb a star billions of miles away. That means everything is connected. So if you harm somebody or hurt somebody, it has a reflection on everybody, including you, when you hurt somebody, but the entire society gets affected. And at the same time, if you are kind or loving or compassionate, you are adding to that unity, you are adding to that. And the totality is being benefited, not just the individual. So when I help somebody, I help all. And when I hurt somebody, I hurt all. And because why? We are all connected. Not only mind is connected, our bodies, because we are all made of five elements, our mind and intellect are connected, our soul, the consciousness is all collected. We are all one. We are not separate from each other. We are not Hindus or Muslims or Christians. We are not separate from animals, birds, plants, fish. That's why we should respect all beings. you know, animals, birds, plants, fish, all beings should be respected and taken care of. And when you hurt somebody or you kill somebody or you harm some organism, you're harming that whole of society. So now let us talk about this. So that is what he says in the first line, that when there's a destruction of society, the whole society suffers. Now he's talking about the forefather, the ceremony called Shraddha. And some of you may know that, but it's a very interesting ceremony. It is, say, your father or grandfather or, you know, whoever your ancestors have passed away. So on the day of their death, on their anniversary of their death, or there is the month of Magh. Magh is the month in the Hindu calendar. On the no moon day, on the darkest day of that month, is the Shraddha day for all Hindus. So either you can do it on your father's or mother's death anniversary, or on that Magh month, on the moonless night. And what they do is they usually will call a priest and will offer this rice ball and water to their ancestors, and also do some charity, some, you know, service, give some, feed the, you know, they will maybe call their family and feed them or help some poor people or do some charity. And generally it is done by men, but if women want to do it, they say you can do it in Bodh Gaya. Bodh Gaya is a place in North India. Women are allowed to do the Shraddha over there. And they say once you do it in Bodh Gaya, then you don't have to do it at all after that. Otherwise, you are expected to remember your forefathers every year. Like in Christianity also, you know, they go to the graveyard, you know, where their ancestors are buried, and they go there and put flowers on either on their birthday of my parents or grandparents, or on the death anniversary. So the idea is to honor and remember the ancestors, because I'm here because of them. I'm here because of my father. My father was here because of the grandfather and great grandfather and mother, of course. So the whole family is there, number one. Number two, it is said that these pitras, they say, what is the use of offering rice and water and feeding here? They don't even know. Because as I said, the body perishes. Those who are not familiar with this chart, this is me. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. And vasanas are my tendencies. And Om is God in me, which God's presence in me is signified by Om. So the body perishes, either it's cremated or buried. It's the subtle body, the mind and intellect, that goes to higher worlds. And there is the world of Pitras, where our ancestors live, until they take another birth. And sometimes it may be after a year, maybe after 50 years, 100 years, you know, we don't know when the soul is ready to take on a new body. And it depends on the vasanas, depends on my actions, and depends on my vasanas. If I have done good deeds, then I'll go to the higher worlds. If I have done negative deeds, then of course I'll go to the lower worlds. But assuming our grandparents and all have done good deeds, so they are in the world of Pitras, which is just below heaven. And it is said that the food, when we consume it, or when we offer it to God or to our ancestors, food has three parts in it, three portions. One is the indigestible portion of the food. So if I eat something which is indigestible, that gets excreted, you know, as fecal material. Then the second part is the part that gives me energy, you know, the carbohydrates, the proteins. So that which builds my muscles and all my different organs and gives me energy to work. So the first part is the excreted. The middle part is the digested part, which is used for the body to be built. And then the third part is called the subtle part of the food. The subtle part of the food builds the mind. So that's why the mind is built by the quality of the food, just as the type of food builds my body, but also the type of food also builds my mind. That's why they say that the person who is cooking, if he or she cooks with love, just as a mother, you know, when she's cooking for her children, she's cooking it with total love. And so then that food has all that positive energy. But if somebody is angry and is cutting the vegetables in anger and just throwing them, what's going to happen? That anger is going to be transmitted to the food, and whoever eats, that person's mind is also going to be affected by that. So in the case of when the food is offered to God, and what happens? The subtle part of the food travels to God, it is said, and then God blesses it and returns it. And that's why that food becomes prasad. That's why when we take food to the temple and offer it to God, or when you even cook for God, you find the food has a different taste. When food is cooked for God, when somebody is offering in the temple and then afterwards everybody is eating, why? Because it has the positive energy of the divine in it. And in this case of our ancestors, the same thing happens. The lower part, you know, is undigested. The middle part is energy. But the subtle part of the food goes to the higher worlds and nourishes our ancestors. It is said that this food, the subtle part, becomes part of the subtle body, the mind and the intellect, and goes to the subtle worlds and nourishes the ancestors. So there are two reasons. One is we recognize, we respect our ancestors. Secondly, this offering, when you do charity in the name of the ancestors and help the world to be better and you know, serve and all that, then that positive karmas and this positive, this subtle food helps the ancestors to evolve further. So from the Pitra Lok, they can go to the higher worlds and heaven, so they can evolve. But if this is not done, I mean, again, you know, if this is something you may believe in it or not, but if they say if this Shraddha is not done, at least if nothing else, you should mentally at least thank your ancestors and maybe do some charity in their name. Then what happens is they fall from there, from the Pitra Lok, and fall from evolution and continue their journey in a lower planes. So the point is that basically, the idea is to recognize. And when this ceremony is not done, then what happens? This is our culture. See, our culture is this. This is what Gurudev says, that religion and culture are integrated. You cannot separate, especially in Hinduism, religion is separate and culture is separate. In Hinduism, culture is admixed with religion, like Diwali, even though we have firecrackers and gifts and parties and all, but behind it is a religious event. You know, Ramchandra ji came back, Navratri, even though there is so much dancing and all that, but what is the basis? Honor the mother goddess. So all our festivals, all our events are very intermingled with religion. You cannot separate and say, oh, I don't believe in religion, I don't believe in God, but I am a good person. You know, that is good. I'm a good person. I help society. But in my opinion, maybe not everybody may agree, but my opinion, belief in the higher is very important. Having a belief that there is a higher entity. You can call it Krishna or Ram or Jesus or Shiva, or you can call it Brahman, or you can call it the total consciousness. But there is a higher reality which is supporting and this whole universe. And I may say, okay, I'm doing very good. I'm like, people tell me, I don't hurt anybody. I live a good life. Why do I need to come to these lectures? Why do I need to go to the temple? Yes, that is very good. If you help society, you do not hurt. But if you want to evolve beyond this, otherwise what's going to happen? You're going to be born again, die again. If you want to get out of this cycle of birth and death, you have to evolve higher. It's like saying, I'm going to keep doing high school all over again and again and again. I don't want to go to college. No. From high school, you have to go to college and then do your master's and do your PhD and ultimately stop studying. How long are you going to stay in school? Get out of that and go to the higher. So the religion and culture are very closely integrated, and that's what this particular Shraddha ceremony tells us. And our scriptures say that we have five kind of rin. Rin, the word rin in Sanskrit means debt. We have a debt, and we have five kind of rin: Pitra rin, Rishi rin, Samaj rin, Bhuta rin, and Deva rin. So what are the five kinds of debts that we have? We all have these five, whether you are a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, we all that. So the first one is Pitra. Pitra means the ancestors. As we said, we owe everything to our ancestors. Our parents gave us birth, took care of us when we were little, cleaned the diapers, and all that. So, and taught us, my mother was the first teacher. So, so we owe the debt to our ancestors. Then second debt is to the rishis. Rishis are the great scholars, the saints, the prophets, who have written all these scriptures, the Gita, the Upanishads, the Bible, the Quran, the, you know, the Dharmapada of Buddhism. So all these scriptures they have composed and given on to us, and we owe a debt to them. You know, you cannot just say, okay, I got it, this knowledge. No, you have to pass on this knowledge. You have to do everything you can to make sure this culture and this knowledge gets continued. We have to make sure our children learn this. We have to make sure that we spread this knowledge in whatever way we can, whoever we can teach. If nothing else, if there is somebody, you can bring him to classes. You can say, Swamiji is here. There is Gita class, the children's classes. So encourage this knowledge continue. It should not perish. And so that is our duty. That is second rin. The third is samaj. Samaj means society. And we get so much from society. You know, we constantly are getting so much. There are so many people who are contributing to make my life comfortable. People who build the roads and people who maintain the gardens, and then the army and the navy, and who are protecting me, the police, the sheriff, the janitors who are cleaning. Everybody is so important, and we take so much from society. You have to give back. That's why John F. Kennedy said, ask not what my country can do for me, but what can I do for my country. So third is the samaj rin. I have to give back. Fourth is the bhuta. Bhuta is, does not mean ghost. That's in Hindi. In Sanskrit, the word bhuta means beings. So all beings. It is my duty to take care of all beings, because I'm nourished by who? By the plants. The plants nourish me. Somebody say, I don't eat plants. I'm a non-vegetarian. I eat meat. Yeah, but the cow you are, or the pig or the chicken, they're all nourished by the plants. They're nourished by vegetables. So all beings are nourishing me. The plants are nourishing me, and then my body is, and so I must take care of the beings. So it is a duty of mine to take care of plants, animals, birds, fish, and other human beings on whom I depend. So that is the fourth one. And then the fifth one is Devarin. Deva means the celestial forces, the gods and the powers. Because again, as I said, the air is nourishing me constantly. I'm breathing. The sunlight is, you know, if the sun was not there, even for a day, this earth would, you know, completely freeze. You know, so moon is maintaining the earth. People think moon is a useless. No, it's not useless. If the moon was not there, the earth would tilt. And once it's tilt, one side would remain always to the sun and other side would remain away. So one side would be burnt and other side would be frozen. So the moon is very important. Look at God's creation. Moon is necessary to maintain the earth properly. We think moon rotates around the earth, but the moon maintains. So all these celestial forces, the rain, you know, they all take care of me. So I have five debts. Debts to my ancestors, to the rishis and prophets, to the society, to other beings, and to devas. So that is what the message of this particular shloka is. Arjuna is right that we have to maintain our traditions and our culture. So that is the essence of this particular verse. We can take a couple of minutes. Any questions, any comments?
How long they lived?
Somebody might take birth in a year, somebody might take 100 years, somebody might take 1,000 years. See, life there is not the same as here. That's why they say one day of Brahmaji is like 4 billion years. So time is very relative.
So what basis?
On what basis? Yes, that's a good question. Right. So depending on their karmas and depending on their vasanas. Suppose they have done a lot of good karmas, very good life, but they have not yet realized, they have not yet become one where they can go to the zone, land of Brahmaji and live, and then, or they have not. So then if they have done a lot of good karmas, then they will stay in heaven for a longer period of time. So they will stay in zones of joy, even though they are in these worlds, they will be. So
it could be. Space is heaven?
No, it is below heaven. It is, there are seven worlds, you know, the highest is Indra Loka, but there are seven worlds which are above us, which are all heavens. There are seven heavens. It's like grade. It's like a penthouse, you know, like in a hotel. You know, the top floor is, you know, $1,000. And then, the second, third, fourth floors are, they are called club or exclusive. They are $500. And then the lowest second floor is $200. So similarly, there are different heavens based on my level of my goodness. So there are seven worlds. So I will be placed in that particular zone where then I will enjoy my good karmas. Or if I have done a lot of evil deeds, then there are six hells below us. Again, hell and heaven is not a place. It's not a location. It is a zone of experience. There either positive experiences or negative experiences. And next verse, I'll talk a little more about hell. But these zones of experiences are, and the degree of joy or sorrow I get depends on my karmas. And then depending on that, my timing could be a lot or could be very little. That's number one. Number two, I have certain vasanas that are unfulfilled in this life. So if my vasanas are very strong, then I will take birth quickly. If I have weakened my vasanas, then my birth may not be very quick. And then what determines my day of birth and where I, what mother's womb I enter, will be dependent on my karmas and my vasanas. Say if I have a desire to learn music and this whole life I wanted to sing and I couldn't, then my next life I'll be born in the house where music is encouraged. Or if I have been very poor and I've been just wanting money, or then, and I'll be born in a house where there is, where I'll get wealth. But on the other hand, if I have lived a life which is, you know, relatively peaceful and, you know, done a lot of spirituality and then a lot of good deeds and learned the scriptures but not yet realized, then Krishna says, such people, I put them in the house of yogis, in the house of wise people, where they can continue their spiritual journey. Like now, Sant Gyaneshwar, his whole family was realized. All his brothers, sisters, they were all very evolved. So depending on my karmas, so the kind of body I get and the kind of family I am born in and the country I am born in is determined by my karmas. If I have good karmas, I'll be born in a good family. If I've done a lot of evil deeds and harm people, then next life, either I'll be born in a lower being, like as I said, like a mosquito or a buffalo or a dog, or I'll be born with, unfortunately, with some physical problems, mental, you know, mentally challenged or Down syndrome or, you know, some issues, or born in very abusive families. If I have been a child molester in this life, it is guaranteed I'll be born in the house of a, where I'll be molested in my next life. So it does not mean that if a person is suffering, you say, oh, he deserves to suffer. No, my job is to make people suffering less and pray to God that may this person suffering. It does not mean that if a person is suffering, he deserves to suffer. No, not like that. But there is a law of karma which you cannot escape. So that determines. So it could be up to even 1,000 years. We don't know. Because time there is very different from time on earth.